Castle, episode 527 for June 19th, 2018. Flash Fiction Extravaganza, In the Beginning. Rated G. And welcome to Podcastle. I'm your host, Setsu Uzume. And if this is your first episode, a warm welcome indeed. For those of you returning, it's always a pleasure. We at the Flying Castle get a chance to visit all kinds of different worlds, meet new beings, and experience all manner of magic. And while the first question is, what can it do? The second question is, how does it work? Which leads to a whole series of inquiry about origins. So how does all this get started? Someone makes the stuff. But what is stuff? It's what everything's made out of. Well, then, if stuff is made of stuff, how does stuff emerge from the previous stuff? Via a series of processes, of course. And if you figure out how to use processes to make stuff, then what does that make you? Well, active, passive, sublime, or scientific, we've got three tales for beginnings big and small. Our first story, Recipe One Universe, was originally published by Galaxy's Edge. It was written by Effie Syberg and will be read by Wilson Fowley. Effie Syberg is a fantasy and science fiction writer. Apart from the Escape Artist family of podcasts, her stories can be found in the Women Destroy Science Fiction special edition of Lightspeed Magazine, which was the winner of the 2015 British Fantasy Award for Best Anthology. Her work can also be found in Galaxy's Edge, Analog, and Fireside Fiction, amongst others. Effie lives in San Francisco, and she likes to make sculpted cakes and bad puns. You should definitely follow her on Twitter if you like either of those things. It's awesome. This story's narrator, Wilson Fowley, is a lifer here at the Flying Castle and has been narrating for us since 2008. He's also narrated for many other podcasts, including all of the Escape Artist casts, Starship Sofa, Tales to Terrify, Beam Me Up, Cast Macabre, Dune Steve Audio Fiction Magazine, and Journey Into podcast. He fits in all this narrating between his day job as a web developer in Vancouver, Canada, and being the director of a community show chorus called the Maple Leaf Singers. And now, strap on your apron and enjoy the story.
Recipe, One Universe, by Effie Syberg. Narrated by Wilson Fowley. Recipe, One Universe, serves everybody. 1. Start with nothing. If you don't have nothing, discard everything. Discard your house and your bed, your friends and your family, and the dog who barks hello to you every time you pass it on your way to work. Discard your work. Discard your hopes and your dreams, your love of peanut butter, and the little crinkle you get at the side of your smile when you smell the seashore. Discard yourself. If you are unable to discard yourself, climb to the top of the tallest mountain and study with the monks who serve at the temple there. When you're done, discard the monks and the mountain, and even your memories of them. 2. When you have nothing, and there is no you to be floating around in the nothingness, stop for a moment and contemplate the peace and quiet. It will not come again. Then discard that moment, because moments are made of time, and you may not keep anything, time least of all. 3. Make a bang. Let that nothingness, which has been aching to be somethingness, which you've been holding back as hard as you can, for steps 1 and 2 are not easy, and are bursting at the non-existent seams to contain, let it go. If done right, everything will explode out from a single infinitesimal point, and there will be everything instead of nothing. Set the temperature at 10 billion degrees Fahrenheit. Safety goggles are advised for this step. 4. At this point, there will be a soup of fundamental particles, of neutrons, electrons, and protons. You will not be able to see these. The free electrons will scatter photons the way sunlight scatters from the water droplets in clouds, but you will be able to feel them, Swirl gently with your finger and take a taste. It should taste like raspberries. If the mixture is slowly cooling and small neutral atoms are beginning to form, you're on the right track. 5. Set your timer to 380,000 years, then check back on your mixture. The expansion should be continuing, so make sure there's room for your nascent universe to grow. You should see a soft latte-colored afterglow. This step is most critical, for the echoes of this glow will be visible until the end of your universe, a twinkling tattoo in the background of everything. 6. Swirl in a healthy dollop of dark energy and sprinkle in some dark matter and stir. Then do this again, and again for another time, for nobody ever estimates it correctly on the first try. A true universe has mysteries and depths beyond what can be expected. Your mixture should still be expanding, and at this point, taste like licorice. Set your timer for about another 400 million years. 7. By now, you should have several elements, and the first stars should have started to form. They should nestle in your mixture and expand away from each other like raisins in raisin bread, though they should be flavored like sharp cinnamon oil. While it is tempting, do not taste the stars in this form, though their bright white glow nearly cries out to be licked. Like with so many beautiful things, you will get burned. 8. If they have not yet begun to do so on their own, collect stars together to form galaxies. Reach in to grab a handful at a time, while wearing protective gloves, of course, then set that cluster twirling around itself. Much like a souffle, be quiet around your universe at this time and avoid bangs and shudders so it doesn't collapse. 9. Add the spark of life. It is recommended to start this process in several locations in parallel, just in case. Of course, you may choose to leave your universe as is, sterile and dead, with the cosmic wind howling upon lifeless moons and stretches of empty space, but it is not recommended. You'll find that a lifeless universe can never be a complete one. 10. If your life has started to evolve in some places but not others, that's okay. If your life has gone extinct in some places, whether through meteorite strikes or stars going nova or through the species' own stupidity, that's okay. Just make sure you seed more life elsewhere and keep going. 11. Do not coddle your life forms, tempting though it may be. The occasional aversion of a meteorite is fine, but you must let your life forms develop on their own. At some point, some life forms will even develop theories about you, and that is fine as well. Do not be tempted by their offerings and flattery. It will do them no good to assume such power over you. However, if you have a set of life forms lacking love, or curiosity, or logic, feel free to discard them and start a new set elsewhere. Such creatures may well ruin the batch. 12. It should be noted at this point that you will not be the only one following this recipe. There will be universes next to yours, steaming on your colleagues' windowsills with tantalizing scents. Resist the urge to connect your universe to theirs. Wormholes are aptly named, and nobody wants a wormy universe. 13. At some point, one of your set of life forms will develop philosophy and science, and will stumble onto this very recipe. One of them will even follow it. This is as it should be. In the process, their, your, universe, will be discarded, and you along with it. Universes, like most things of beauty, are ephemeral, cyclical things. Before you and your universe wink out of existence, take a moment to appreciate the one who came before you and built your original universe, for you had discarded them without a moment's thought at the beginning of this process. Toast them with a glass of champagne and a thick slice of your freshly baked universe, studded with stars and planets and love, before you blink away.
And welcome back. Some of the tidbits in this recipe are real science facts, such as the color cosmic latte, or that the ethyl formate in Sagittarius B is the same chemical that gives raspberries their flavor. Check out the links and more information in the show notes. Our second story, of the dreams yet to come, is a smaller moment of creation. It was written for you by Paul Alex Gray. Paul Alex Gray was born in the UK and now lives in Canada with his wife and two children. He's a huge fan of interactive fiction and started launching his own game startup with friends. You can find his fiction, interactive and otherwise, on his website, paulalexgray.com, and keep up with him on Twitter at paulalexgray. The narrator for this story is Kaylin Norman Slack. Kaylin Norman Slack works during the day as a support engineer and spends the rest of his time voice acting, composing music, and making games. You can find his music on SoundCloud under Mr. Game and Audio.
Of Dreams Yet to Come by Paul Alex Gray. The brush slipped across the surface of the egg with the slightest whisper, fine hairs trailing a crimson line in their wake. A comet, perhaps, burnt against an indigo sky. Olivier dipped the brush in his warm ceramic dish, dabbing the edges to let the colors fade. He ran his hands over the wooden bench, worn smooth and waxy. Long ago, his daughter Jessa had caught her finger on a rare splinter here, leaving tears, and a little drop of blood. He had led her to the rectory and bought two cookies, toast stars, each with a dollop of raspberry jam in the center. Beneath the jacarandas in the courtyard, she had asked if there were any colors yet to discover. He had led her back to the chamber, and she helped him paint an egg, one eye squeezed tight and the tip of her tongue held out. As the hues mixed together, he told her how the dreams were brought into being. He could still feel those small fingers within his, guiding her imagination along the shell. "That will be your last one, eh?" Mala's voice came warm and kind. She stood beside him, wrapped in her dreamcrafter's robes, peering over half-rimmed glasses.
"Seems to be so," said Olivier faintly, his thoughts still honed onto paint-speckled hands.
"It's a beauty," said Mala as she leaned over to peer at the egg.
"I can't imagine how many I've painted," he said, reaching out to seal the vial.
He was always telling off apprentices who left them open.
"Oh my, thousands," laughed Mala as she shuffled back to her workbench.
She sat slowly and raised two vials, looking from one to the other before selecting the darker shade.
"Tens of thousands," she said, and began to paint.
Olivier plucked at his brush, twisting it slowly. He carefully dipped the tip into the gold dust ink for the final coat. His hands trembled, and he left a splotch of yellow on the egg. It was so unlike him. He stood and made his way to the southern window. The evening shone ochre calm and vast gray clouds etched in the distance. Far below, the jacarandas sighed in the breeze. Their leaves were young and broad. Purple-shrouded boughs covered the sight of the fountain beneath, but not the sound of tumbling water. How could it have been so long ago, sitting there with his wife watching their daughters, meticulous Kyla taking her own brush to a paper egg, while Jessa splashed and squealed and kicked the water? Now Kyla had a family of her own. She worked at the tower, painting dreams just as she'd always wanted. She was the only one that stayed, neither taken nor gone of her own free will. The noise of a shell crunching brought him back to the moment. There was a ruffle of feathers and a chirp. Apprentice Jacqueline's dreams. They always brought brilliant little birds. With a swoosh, the tiny thing was cast from the tower.
"I'm off, mate," said the tall young man ambling over from the north window.
He extended a paint-splattered hand.
"Thanks for everything," he said and left, leaving just Olivier and Mala in the chamber.
33 years, distilled down to a final few minutes. It was time to finish up. He passed floor-to-ceiling patterns of color. So much knowledge, steeped in vials and beakers, spilled and imbibed within stone floor and maple benchtops, written into feathers and bone and dreams flung afar. There was home to escape to. Kyla had told him not to come late. She no doubt had a fine meal prepared, and the faculty had given him the lovely bottle of Shiraz. He knew his grandchildren had baked a cake. Within a few hours, he would be sitting by the brazier, sipping wine. Olivier sat at his bench once more. Holding the brush firm, he traced a golden light of sunset along the peak, turning it slowly, round and round until the colors were finished and glimmered through his tears. Once there was a girl, bright-eyed and filled with fire, the youngest, not ready for a home, suddenly silent. Perhaps Olivier had been too insensitive, too distracted by the endless need for dreams. There were arguments and screaming matches, a drawing in of seasons and long, cold, quiet months. Then she was gone. The egg shuffled, and Olivier heard a muffled peep. Taking it to the window, he sensed a rhythm in his pulse, the potent magic slipping through and within. Outside, the first stars shone, brilliant despite their distance. He waited while the little thing broke its shell, remembering back to Jessa's first bird. It was big, and she had squealed with laughter as it hooted and honked its way free. The egg cracked. Olivier tenderly helped the little bird push open the shell. Jet-black eyes blinked as it sat wavering. He pulled the pieces away. Feathers began to dry, and it transformed before his eyes, growing larger and stronger, drawing in its dream. Wings stretched out cerulean bright. It shivered and shook away its last down feathers as it cried out, a lilting sound that echoed all around. Olivier held his hands up, and the bird turned, drawn to the sky. It jumped once, flapped its wings, and then leapt out. A cascading song fell away, gone in just a moment. He watched long after it had disappeared from sight. Olivier gathered his things and glanced around the chamber. He cleaned his brushes and dish and left them to dry. He bade farewell to Mala and moved down the twisting stairs. He wandered out into the warm embrace of night, making his way home. He held on to the sound of the birds' cries, imagining all the dreams he'd painted. Some remembered, some forgotten, and some yet to come.
And welcome back. Our third and final story this week reaches back to Podcastle's own beginnings. Intelligent Design by Ellen Klages first appeared on Podcastle back in 2008 and was originally published in Strange Horizons in 2005. Ellen Klages' short fiction, previously collected in the World Fantasy Award-nominated Portable Childhoods, has appeared in numerous magazines and anthologies and has been translated into more than 7 languages and republished worldwide. A graduate from Second City's infamous improv program, Klages also holds a degree in philosophy, which led to many randomly alliterative jobs such as proofreader, photographer, painter, and pinball arcade manager. This story's narrator, M.K. Hobson, has followed time-honored authorial tradition and become a bitter recluse, swearing off all social media. Luckily for us, she still lets the flying castle park outside her window and comes aboard now and then to read us stories. She leavens the tedium of her vastly expanded free time with misanthropy, paranoia, and weightlifting. And now lift your eyes to the stars and enjoy the story.
Intelligent Design by Ellen Klages. If one could conclude as to the nature of the Creator from a study of creation, it would appear that God has an inordinate fondness for stars and beetles. J.B.S. Haldane, 1951. God cocked his thumb and aimed his index finger at the firmament. Kapow! Pow! Pow! A line of 3 perfect glowing pinpoints of light appeared in the black void. He squeezed his eyes almost shut and let off a single shot. Ping! The pinprick of light at the far edge of the firmament, just where it touched the rim of the earth, glowed faintly red. God got bored. Rat-a-tat-a-tat-a-tat-a-tat! He peppered one corner of the sky with tiny specks of light clustered tight together. Each one glowed steadily. God lay down on his back and looked up at what he'd created. It was okay. He blinked. The lights flickered in and out. He blinked again. Flicker, flicker, flicker. God lay on his back and thought hard for a tiny bit of time, then stopped blinking. The lights continued to shimmer and twinkle up in the firmament. God smiled. That was better. God's grandmother, she who was before the before, she who created dust out of nothing and the universe out of dust, sculptor of the clay of the world, creator and destroyer, was baking. She peered through the thickening mist that separated that which is from that which is becoming and sighed. God, she called out, don't you think that's enough of those? She had thought the night should remain in darkness. It was getting quite light in the firmament. Just a couple more, God said. All right, but only a few. Then I need you to come in and help with the animals. Nana Deus rolled out a sheet of clay while she waited for God to come in out of the void. Now that there was fire, there was much to be done. Systems and cycles and chains of being to set in place. And the oceans, which had turned out to be a little tricky. The waters had been gathered together, separate from the dry land, and that was fine. But they weren't moving. They just lay there, wet and placid and still. She'd gone out and shifted them back and forth, and they did move, but then they slowed down and lay still again, and that just wouldn't do. They had to keep moving, and she didn't have the time to go out and shake them twice a day. Besides, they were too heavy for her to be lifting all the time. Maybe she had made the deep too deep. Where was God? If he could help make some of the simpler creatures, she'd have time to deal with the oceans. God lay on the earth, watching the twinkling stars, spraying random corners of the firmament with his outstretched finger, filling in the parts that seemed a little empty. Pow! Pa-pow, pow, pow! Ka-pow! Oops. He pursed his lips and drew in a breath, sucking a bit of light from that spot, then another and another, until there were a few holes in the midst of the stars, blacker than the black of the void. He sat up and examined a small muddy pebble clinging to his right knee. He put it on the palm of his hand and flicked it with his first finger as hard as he could. The pebble shot far up into the firmament. God waited for it to fall down again, but it didn't. It wobbled a little, then just hung there. God made a pop sound with his lips, and the pebble began to glow with a bright white light. He grinned and reached for another pebble. "God, I need you now," called Nana Deus. God dropped the pebble and went in. "What are you making? Can I help?" Nana Deus smiled and rumpled his hair. "Yes, you can. You can be a big help right now. Watch what I do." She pulled a tray of tiny brown ovals from the oven. "You need to decorate them while they're still soft," she said, putting one on the counter. She reached into one of the bins that lined the counter. "Legs," said one. "Wings. Antennae." She stretched the oval a little, added two hair-like feelers and six legs, daubed it with a bit of green pigment, and added two multicolored wings. She held out her palm. The little bug was perfect in every detail, except it was just clay. Its tiny eyes were blank and featureless, and it lay still. "Pay attention," she said. "This is important." She picked up another soft, baked lump and added identical legs and antennae and wings, stretching it in the same way. "You have to make two of each. They can be different colors if you want, but the very same creature. Okay, God?" He nodded slowly, his eyes wide and curious. "Good. Now watch." She pinched a bit of bluish, sparkling dust from a stone vat on the counter and sprinkled it over the dark shapes. "This is the fun part." She leaned over the clay figures and breathed on them gently. "Butterfly," she said. The butterfly's wings quivered, then slowly beat together and out again. They flew onto the edge of the tray, to God's shoulder, and out into the void. "Wow!" God clapped his hands in delight. "Can I try?" His grandmother scooped two clay dots from the tray. God stuck his tongue in the corner of his mouth and very carefully put five tiny legs into the warm clay. "Can I make them red?" he asked. "Yes," laughed Nana Deus. "We'll need a lot of insects, and you may decorate them in any colors you want. Do try for symmetry, though, won't you, dear?" God nodded solemnly and added a sixth leg and two little wings. He painted the round bugs bright red and, after a moment's thought, added some tiny black spots. He held them out to Nana Deus. "Very nice," she said. She sprinkled and blew onto them. "Ladybug," she said, and they flew away. "What other kind of bugs can I make?" God asked. "Use your imagination," she said. "Just don't get carried away. Keep them small." "Yay," said God. "But," she held up her finger in warning, "remember, only two of each kind. They will make more of themselves." "Okay," said God. He made two red ants and two tiny green aphids, and a pair of flies with fuzzy flocked legs. Nana Deus had just breathed onto the second fly when there was a shudder and then silence. "Oh, God, the seas have stopped," she sighed. "Will you be all right by yourself? I need to start them up again." He nodded. "I like making bugs," he said. "I thought you might," Nana Deus smiled. "Have fun, but don't sprinkle them. We'll name them all when I come back." She patted him on the cheek and went out to deal with still waters. God made two brown ants and a different kind of aphid. Then he looked to make certain that his grandmother was gone and opened all the other bins. Fangs, pincers, horns, armor, stingers.
Cool, said God. He took one of the larger mounds and outfitted it with fierce claws and long, fuzzy antennae, painting it bright, bright green. Then he made 300 dozen more, each more fearsome and garish than the last. Horns, claws, stripes, spots, bristling legs, and armored carapaces blazed in every iridescent hue. Bugs everywhere! God wanted to make even more, but he had run out of counter space. Where could he move them to? Move? God looked at the vat of shimmering dust. Nana Deus had said to wait for her, but... He took a handful of the dust and flung it over the trays of inanimate insects. Well, said Nana Deus from out of the void, that was easier than I'd feared. Her voice was small and distant. The rock you put up there really did the trick. Moon tides. Now, why didn't I think of that ages ago? She was getting closer. God could hear her sensible shoes trampling across the face of the earth. He looked at the shimmering trays of bugs and blew hard over all of them at once. God whispered as fast as he could, scarab, 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 weevil, tiger beetle, leaf beetle, weevil, 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 click beetle, harlequin, palm borer, leaf miner, firefly, weevil, 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 jewel beetle, blister beetle, bark beetle, flower beetle, stag beetle, potato beetle, stink beetle. God, how are you coming with those insects? Nana Deus asked from just beyond. God looked over his shoulder, then quickly back at the last pair of unmoving creatures on the tray. Dung beetle, he said with a grin, and it was so. Then he leaned back and began to whistle, as if he hadn't done anything at all. Creeping things covered every surface, legs and claws and pincers, scuttling and skittering. God saw them and smiled. They were good.
And welcome back. Origin stories are powerful and inseparable from the reasons and justifications for everything that follows. It's how we got here, and thus subject to investigation, testing, and re-examination so we can dig deep for the truth. After all, the desire to know how and why is only the beginning. Our closing quote comes from Douglas Adams, who, after an astonishing scuba diving trip, said the following. If I were not an atheist, I think I would have to be a Catholic. Because if it wasn't the forces of natural selection that designed fish, it must have been an Italian. That was our show for this week. On behalf of everyone here at the Podcastle, our audio engineer Peter Baravesh, our forum moderator Aussie Cat, and our co-editors Jen Albert and Khalida Muhammad Ali, along with all of our associate editors, Aidan Doyle, Crystal Claxton, Matt Dovey, Eleanor Wood, Stephanie Cox, Devin Martin, Stephen Capps, Elora Gatz, Julia Pat, Hamilton Perez, Naru Sundar, Sui Davies Okumboa, and Raj Gopal. Thanks for letting us share another 3 stories with you. Be sure to share it with your friends, hit us up on social media, and if you would like to show some extra love, head to patreon.com/EAPodcasts for special events, bonus episodes, and Podcastle appearances in the wild. We'll be back next week with another tale. See you then.